This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. On today's show, we'll hear about Go Baby Go and how it's helping children with mobility challenges. But first, with the 4th of July coming up next week, we take a look at the world of finance through the eyes of our country's founders. Joining us is Chris DeSimeo, a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. He's come up with a list of books on the topic he says will make for entertaining, instructive, profitable, and nonpartisan summer reading enlightenment. Chris, good afternoon. Good to see you.
Good afternoon, Mark. I forgot I'd written that, didn't I?
You did, and I stole every word of it.
Well, that was the idea. That is the idea. We have a few books here.
And before we get our discussion going on those books, Chris, because I'm really curious to hear what is on your list, let's talk about the economic numbers today that are worthy of keeping an eye on.
Well, we did get a peek at the durable goods report for the prior month, and it was less than expected. Now, these are things that it takes your kids more than a year to ruin. And these durable goods, you know, freezers, refrigerators, cars, and that, they're expected to be down a little bit. They were looking for a decline of 0.4%. But what we got actually was a decline of 1.1%. Now, this number is notoriously volatile from month to month, subject to revision. So it kind of gets headlines, but it shouldn't.
Okay.
It shouldn't. So earlier today, the market was up over 115 points. And as we now speak, we're up about 43. So it went from zero to up 115, back to the starting line. So we're just kind of noodling around as the market gets ready for a long weekend next week.
And is the reaction that the market, the drop that it took, was that durable goods? Was that number causing that?
Or
were they taking your advice and ignoring it?
They were trying to see what we're going to talk about today. They wanted to go through they wanted to see where to get their hands on the books that we have stacked around us. Now, you know, actually, it's interesting because coming into a weekend, normally these holidays, you'll get a long holiday weekend. There is a tradition on Wall Street, though, that the market cannot be closed more than four consecutive days. And so we're always closed on Saturday, always closed on Sunday. The 4th of July is a Tuesday. So believe it or not, the stock market, the New York Stock Exchange, will open for business on Monday, July 3rd.
Okay.
No
but
one
then
will
it'll be closed the very next day.
Correct.
No one will
very
be
few
there.
People. Very few people will be there.
Like the rest of the nation.
In fact, it will be an abbreviated session. But in case someone has to buy or sell something, it'll be open on Monday, the 3rd.
So you've come up with this list of books about relating to the founding fathers and the financial system that they created for our country. And before you actually start talking about the books themselves, I just wondered if you can tell us, how can books about history, how can they make someone a better investor?
Well, what they do, a good one, will encourage you and lead you to understand how to think instead of telling you what to think. I mean, a good book should give you context and framework for what we're looking at now. It'd be sort of like if you were going to buy a home, if you had in your hands a copy of the architect's blueprints when you walked in, you would know what's been remodeled and what hasn't. You would know what's original and what isn't. And so having a historic context in which to view what's happening today is one of the most helpful things an investor can do, because we live in this 24-hour news cycle where especially commercial media, they're in the business of selling commercials. And to get you to watch and to point and to click and to share on social media, it has to be something that's eye-catching. And sometimes that can frequently lead to an investment decision that's not profitable.
So if you know your history, you're not going to make the same mistakes that somebody in the past has made.
You shouldn't. If you know the history and you make the mistake, then it's your fault. And there was a wonderful book about that written by Barbara Tuchman, who I almost brought here today. It should be on this
almost
list.
Almost made your list.
She won two Pulitzers, one for The Guns of August and the other one for Stillwell and The American Experience in China. She wrote a book called The March of Folly, which is it turns out to be an investing book, because it talks about how Montezuma handed away his kingdom to Spain. It talked about the Renaissance popes. It talked about America in the Vietnam era. It talked about Great Britain forcing the colonies to rebel. The taxes that the British had imposed on the colonies would have maybe closed about 2% of the budget deficit created by the French and Indian War, the Seven Years' War. And yet they did it anyway. And it was folly. It was wooden-headedness, as Barbara Tuchman said. So if you read that book, you understand how otherwise intelligent groups of people will actively pursue policies that are counter to their own best interests. And they do so despite being warned. Happened in Troy, too. You don't have to don't take the horse in. You don't have to do it.
You're not talking about Troy, Ohio.
No, Troy. Okay. Yeah, and actually, what happens is that a lot of times investors will make unforced errors. You know, they see something on TV, or they see a commercial, the next door neighbor or someone they work with says, "Hey, psst, you know, did you hear about?" Or they're at the golf course and they hear about something that's literally too good to be true, and it leads to trouble. So if you have an historic context, if you know what was going on, if you know, for example, how our financial system came into being in the first place, then you have a better chance of not falling into the same trap.
So what's on your list, Chris?
Well, for starters, Founding Brothers, written by Joseph Ellis. It was written, published in the year 2000, won a Pulitzer for it. In it, it's one of those books that it's a multiple biography kind of wrapped around a theme. So some history books are biographies. Others are just themed books about an idea. This Founding Brothers talks about the seven people: Franklin, Madison, Hamilton, Aaron Burr, Jefferson, John Adams, and George Washington, who together helped create the country in which we live. Hamilton, in this, there's a chapter called The Dinner. And at The Dinner, Hamilton is trying to get the Virginians, Jefferson and Madison, to agree to let the federal government assume their debts. Now, you would think this would be, well, if I walked in here and said, "Mark, I want to pay all your bills for you," you'd...
What do I have to do?
Yeah. But the next question is, well, what do I have to give up in exchange for this? And what they were giving up was control of their own economy. They were giving up power. And in exchange for giving up the power to control their own economic destinies, the capital of the United States was relocated at that dinner, which was held in New York. It was relocated from New York to the swamps on the Potomac, Washington, D.C., with a stop in Philadelphia on the way. But it shows up again in the Broadway musical Hamilton. The Room Where It Happens is all about Chapter 6 in The Founding Brothers by Joseph Ellis. Oh, Chapter 2, pardon me, The Dinner by Joseph Ellis.
Okay, so that's tops on your list, Founding Brothers by
Founding
Joseph
Brothers.
Ellis.
Yes.
If you have a suggestion for a book that would talk about the beginning of our nation's financial system, whatever your favorite book might happen to be on that topic, give us a call and let us know what it is, 513-419-7100. Or you can email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. So after Founding Brothers, Chris, what comes next?
Pardon me.
Most certainly.
I had some of that fine public radio water go down the wrong pipe here. Joseph Ellis wrote a book that was published in 2015, 2016, and it's called The Quartet.
Okay.
Orchestrating the Second American Revolution. And in The Quartet, he talks about how we got from the Articles of Confederation to the Constitution. Most people think of the Articles of Confederation as a footnote. Ellis points out why they were written the way they were, intentionally weak, what the arguments behind it were, the same arguments really as happened during the Constitutional Convention of 1775 and 1776, people not trusting a distant government. And so the concern in The Quartet was, how did these four people, in this case, Washington, Jefferson, Hamilton, and John Jay, how did they recognize what would have happened if we'd remained united in this loose confederation, these Articles of Confederation, and why something more permanent was needed? John Jay in 1779 talks about it in this book. extensive wildernesses, now scarcely known or exposed, remain yet to be cultivated in vast lakes and rivers whose waters have for ages rolled in silence and obscurity to the ocean, are yet to hear the din of industry, become subservient to commerce, and boast villas, gilded spires, and spacious cities rising on their banks. He could have been describing Cincinnati 9 years before it was founded. So it takes what these books do, a good one such as The Quartet or Founding Brothers, help you to develop a vision and recognize patterns of thinking that are forward-looking.
And we'll continue our conversation with Chris DeSimeo. Again, if you have a favorite book about the founding and the nation's financial system, give us a call, 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney, and joining us on this June 26, 2017 is Chris DeSimeo, financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati, as we take a look at the world of finance through the eyes of our country's founders. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk@wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris, just real quickly, we're talking about the Articles of Confederation before we went to the break. Mm-hmm. And just for some context, that was the law of the land before the Constitution. They had these articles and they set up to govern how the government would operate. But
how the various former colonies would interact with each other. Correct.
But it was a very, very diluted and very weak document. That was one of the concerns about it that led to the creation of the Constitution.
Right. And the point that Ellis makes and illustrates very clearly in the book, The Quartet, was how the European powers were circling above like vultures ready to pick apart what was left of the 13 former colonies as they fell into disunion and squabbled amongst each other. So Spain still owned Florida at the time. You had the British were actually encroaching into Michigan and the Northwest. You had the French were still in control of New Orleans and the West beyond that. So Russia was in California, actually. They had a presence there. So it was anything but a foregone conclusion that we would take the same shape as we have today. And that book tells you exactly how it was done, who did it, and why they did it.
Okay, what's next on the list, Chris?
Well, it's a book called The Men Who United the States by Simon Winchester. And if you enjoyed reading the book about the Oxford English Dictionary called The Professor and the Madman, this was written by the same gentleman back in 2013. And in this book, he tells some life stories. It's populated with some very familiar names and others that you may not know. But it also is arranged around topics. So in other words, when America was dominated by wood. So imagine how did people, when they first came to the East Coast, literally make their way through the forests? What made them do it? Why did they do it? How did they do it? He talks in this book about how we first came to be surveyed after the Northwest Ordinances were written. Surveyors were sent. In fact, it's in this book. Believe it or not, you know where the very first stake was driven in the ground? The
No.
point from which the rest of the United States is measured? East Liverpool, Ohio.
Okay, really?
There is a concrete marker right there. East Liverpool, Ohio. And from that come the seven ranges. So land began to be surveyed. And he talks about how they did it, who the surveyors were, why they stopped, because at least at first, because the natives who were there before the surveyors, they kind of knew what those guys in the funny clothes with chains and measuring devices were up to, and they knew what it meant, and they were not happy about it. And thus began some of the things which show up in another book called Jacksonland. But this book, The Men Who United the States, tells a story about how we came to be physically as a country. Not a founding father, but Dwight Eisenhower shows up in this book and the birth of the interstate highway system. We take it for granted that we can just hop in our car and drive
anywhere.
Exactly,
yeah.
After World War I, the concern was, well, what would happen if we were attacked from the West, if the West Coast came under attack? How long would it take to get the Army from Washington to San Francisco? They put together 79 vehicles, Caterpillar tractors, they had the whole bit. They had 276 people on this thing. Of the 79 vehicles, 9 of them were ruined. Of the 276 people who set out after World War I to get from Washington, D.C. to San Francisco, 21, nearly 10, about 8% of those people were killed. It took 62 days to get from Washington to San Francisco. And when Eisenhower, who was on that expedition, who pretty much led it, when he became president, one of the first things he did was make the interstate highway system that we now know and take for granted today. But it's still called the Eisenhower Interstate Highway System.
So is it fair to say a lot of that book is about expansion, moving across the country?
It's about expansion. It's about recognition of what the resources are, how things, whether it's a physical good or media, how it moves and how it's the arc of how it's moving faster has changed. So the men who united the states, it's a wonderful look at what goes on above us, you know, through the air, under the ground, in the woods.
And but Simon Winchester's the author.
Simon Winchester, yes.
Okay. Next on your list is?
The Tycoons.
The Tycoons.
By Charles Morris.
Okay, I have a little bit of familiarity with that one. That's an interesting book.
It's ostensibly about Andrew Carnegie, John David Rockefeller, Andrew Gould, and J.P. Morgan. It's ostensibly about these four men, but it's really about the economic history of the United States. He starts by tracing the path of Lincoln's funeral train back from Washington through Illinois and how the country had changed from the time he came to Washington to the time he left. One of the things it talks about in this book, and this is shortly after the founding generation, but some of the phrases that we just take for granted arise in this book. How about lock, stock, and barrel? We still use that, right?
Yeah.
Do you know what that refers to?
No.
It's a gunsmithing term. They lock, as in what locks the trigger, the stock, which is the piece of wood, and of course, the barrel. Lock, stock, and barrel. And what this book describes is how American manufacturing became the envy of the world after 1819 because they figured out how to make interchangeable parts. Before that, if you went into battle, you had to take your gunsmith with you. He had to be right there. If he didn't get shot, he had to be right there because if you needed a part, they would make it on the spot. Well, the idea of interchangeable parts hadn't, you know, it was a pipe dream until a guy named Thomas Blanchard figured it out how to do it with duplicating and repeating lathes. All this happening in the mill towns in New England, in Massachusetts and Connecticut. So the Springfield, right, and such as that. All those mills were there where they could make these identical parts, and they stunned the world. Back in the 1832 exhibit in Europe, in England, the Crystal Palace exhibition is described in The Tycoons. Again, this is the era when these guys were just being born and were little kids and coming into their own as young adults. One of the American manufacturers took them all apart and then reassembled them from different parts from different guns, all fitting back together. The world was shocked, just shocked. And that then worked its way into other manufacturing processes and other businesses that we still use today.
And I think the other interesting thing that comes out of that book is that J.P. Morgan was actually playing a balancing act. He was balancing out the other three men in this book.
He was. He was. And not only that, this book, if you wonder, when people talk about the Federal Reserve, this book does a great job of describing the pattern of booms and busts that regularly visited the American economy, whether it was in the 1830s because of the Second National Bank not having its charter renewed by Andrew Jackson, to the 1870s, the Panic of 73, and then the 1890s, frequent booms and busts because there was no lender of last resort. And fortunes across the country and here in Cincinnati were lost over and over again because of this cycle of booms and busts, and that the Federal Reserve was designed to get rid of that cycle.
So that's The Tycoons by Charles Morris.
By Charles Morris.
Okay.
Exactly.
Okay. Continue.
We have right here a book called Frontiers of Freedom. This is about Cincinnati's black community, 1802-1868, by Nicky Taylor. If you wonder how it is that Cincinnati got to be so big, she talks about the riverboats and the impact that it made. Do you know how long it took to get from Cincinnati to New Orleans and back before the steamboat? 100 days.
I would have said over a month, but 100 days?
3 months.
3 months.
3 months. After the steamboat, about a month. To get from here to Pittsburgh used to take 27 days. After that, it was much, much shorter. It was 27 hours. So this book tells you a lot about the background that it doesn't have the same kind of narrative. It's not about these four guys. It's not about Carnegie, Rockefeller, Gould, and J.P. Morgan. So it doesn't have that kind of driving narrative that, for example, Jacksonland does by NPR's Steve Inskeep. But it's got a lot of great background information. So as you're reading The Men Who United the States or The Tycoons, sometimes it's good to have a book such as The Frontiers of Freedom or Cincinnati in 1840 by Walter Stix Glaser right there by your side. But a good book, something you want to take to the beach, should be just full of characters and some of which whose names you know who may seem larger than life. But these books, a good one, will actually put you in the room with them as they're making these decisions, the way Joseph Ellis puts you in the room where it happened with Jefferson, Madison, and Alexander Hamilton.
Now, did Hamilton make the list?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't have it here with me, but of course.
Ron Chernow's version of those.
Yes.
Book. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Chernow's also written a book about Rockefeller called Titan and a book about J.P. Morgan. They're all... He does good work.
Yeah. And the book he wrote on Hamilton, that was the inspiration for the musical too, wasn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly. There's no doubt about it. There is no doubt about it. That book, you can see the American financial system kind of springing almost full grown from the mind of this young man who, you know, born on a little remote Caribbean island and then growing up on St. Croix after his mom died in St. Kitts, and then learning how to do business and coming to detest slavery, which was legal in the Virgin Islands until about 1860.
And Hamilton's credited with being the founder of our country's financial system.
No doubt about it. First Secretary of the Treasury.
Any other books?
Well, I would say that another book that's a good book to read while you are reading these other books, to have as a reference, is a book, it almost is like a textbook. It's called The Ohio Frontier by R. Douglas Hurt, published about 10 years ago. The Ohio Frontier, Crucible of the Old Northwest. And what's different about this book is that it takes you from the pre-revolution through the early days as we enter the modern world of economy. It has a good deal about the maps, the surveys. Here they are right here. I know this doesn't make great radio, but I got a picture of the early surveys. It's organized by theme. So you can, if you're interested in, for example, how did we measure the land, you can go right to that topic. If you're interested in how did religion, organized religion, make its way into the Northwest Territory, you can just skip all the other chapters and go right to that. If you wanted to know about transportation or commerce, they're listed there by topic as opposed to, and then each chapter goes chronologically within each chapter. But it's a good book that you can just kind of parachute into an idea and then step out of it later on.
Neil Ferguson's book.
A Scent of Money.
Yes. That's
another good one.
Okay.
Another easy to read, colorful narrative, especially his descriptions of how the Confederacy's cause was made nearly impossible by Farragut bottling up the Mississippi River at New Orleans. The bonds that they had issued were backed by cotton. And he makes a point that collateral is only good if the lender can get his hands on it. And once the cotton could not be exported by the Confederacy, that was it.
Tie this all together for us one more time here, Chris, the connection between good investing habits and understanding history.
Understanding history helps you avoid mistakes because other people have made them for you. And a good history book will describe what the mistake was, how it was made, and what it cost. And so reading these books, The Men Who United the States, reading The Tycoons, reading The Quartet, Founding Brothers, Hamilton, it teaches you, gives you a sense of exactly what mistakes to avoid so that when you sit down and contemplate an investment, you can ask, how does this fit into the broader sweep of time?
And we have Chris's list at WVXU.org. And Chris, thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Chris DeSimeo, financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Cincinnati. Listeners are reminded the information provided on the show is general in nature and may not apply to your personal investment situation.